Coming up on KUCB News, the Trump administration announces plans to open U.S. waters to offshore drilling, and the Department of Justice rescinds Obama-era guidance on commercial cannabis industries. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Thursday, January 4th, 2018. The Trump administration has proposed a vast increase in offshore waters available for oil drilling nationwide. That could mean that more waters off Alaska's shores will be offered for oil and gas development than ever before. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke made the announcement in a call with reporters this morning.
Today we're embarking on a new path for energy dominance in America, particularly on offshore.
As expected, the Interior Department is proposing to allow oil development in federal Arctic waters that former President Barack Obama mostly took off the table in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. But the draft plan also includes waters where Alaskans haven't contemplated oil development for many years, if ever. That includes the Gulf of Alaska, waters off the Aleutian Islands, and waters off Kodiak. The only area off Alaska's shores not under consideration for oil leasing is the North Aleutian Basin, which encompasses Bristol Bay. In total, between the years 2019 and 2024, the administration is considering 19 offshore oil and gas lease sales in the Alaska region. The Interior Secretary stressed that the plan is not final yet.
This is a draft program. The president clearly has outlined that the states, local communities, the congressional delegations, all will have a say.
Still, the environmental community immediately slammed the announcement. Susan Murray is Deputy Vice President of the Pacific for Oceana in Juneau.
The idea that we drill offshore in these places and put at risk this unique ecosystem is something that the American people will assume all the risk while the oil companies get all the profits.
When the proposal is finalized, it will replace the plan the Obama administration put out in 2016. That plan was controversial in Alaska because it didn't include any oil and gas lease sales in Arctic federal waters. The Department of Justice announced today that it will rescind an Obama-era decision that helped open the door to commercial cannabis industries in states like Alaska. In a memo this morning, Attorney General Jeff Sessions says Justice Department officials should return to enforcing federal laws over marijuana. That upends 2013 guidance laid out in what's called the Cole Memo, which instructed federal prosecutors to defer to state laws when it comes to cannabis. The move gave cover to states like Alaska, where voters opted to legalize highly regulated commercial cannabis industries in 2014. Since then, a handful of other states have voted to legalize recreational marijuana. Sessions said the decision, quote, simply directs all U.S. attorneys to disrupt criminal organizations, tackle the growing drug crisis, and thwart violent crime across our country. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage declined to comment or answer questions about how it will change its enforcement strategy in Alaska, directing all inquiries to DOJ offices in Washington, D.C. Elected officials in Alaska are not pleased. In a statement on Twitter, Senator Lisa Murkowski calls the decision regrettable and disruptive. Governor Bill Walker says the move is disappointing and says he'll work with federal and congressional officials to prevent federal overreach. Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth says the administration is still evaluating what the decision means for Alaska, but will continue upholding state laws. In late November, one of the world's largest credit rating agencies announced that climbing global temperatures and rising sea levels would have an economic impact on the U.S. In short, climate change could become a credit rating problem for some U.S. cities and states. But even though Alaska is warming nearly twice as fast as the rest of the United States and dozens of towns and villages are at risk of destruction, the state's credit might not be affected. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney checks in with the state's Department of Revenue to find out why.
From rising sea levels to droughts and flooding to wildfires and more frequent hurricanes, Moody's makes it clear that the changing climate can have a very real impact on a budget. The global credit rating giant put out a climate change impact report in late November. It says that if federal, state, and local governments don't adapt and develop strategies to cope with these changes, their credit ratings could take a hit. And in Alaska, some of these changes are very visible. Villages like Newtok and Shishmaref are losing ground to melting permafrost and erosion. Glaciers are receding. Arctic temperatures are rising. Sea ice is melting. Governor Bill Walker called the state ground zero for climate change. And the report highlights that Alaska has been more affected by climate change than any other U.S. state. But that doesn't mean that the state's climate risk is a credit risk. Devin Mitchell is the credit rating guy in the Department of Revenue. He says there's a difference between an economic perspective and a human one.
While it's obviously devastating if you're living in a community that's experiencing erosion and loss of land due to changing climate, and your community is in danger of disappearing, well, yeah, that's a very important issue to deal with. But from an economic perspective, we're not generating any revenue from an economy that exists in those communities. And so it doesn't impair our state's ability to pay its bills.
The state's ability to pay its bills is really the only thing that factors into its credit rating. To be clear, Mitchell says he thinks considering the effects of climate change requires a lot of nuance, and he isn't weighing in as for or against state or federal policy around it. What he is saying is that the Moody's report is looking at climate change from a purely economic perspective. And when you do that, he says Alaska is in a pretty unique situation, one where the effects of climate change are very, very obvious, but the impact on the state's credit rating is vague. For instance, looking at the villages of Newtok and Shishmaref, if the federal government steps in and helps the villages relocate, Mitchell says that's revenue.
If you spend $100 million to relocate Shishmaref or Newtok, then that's going to be money that's going to go into folks in Alaska's pocket as they help accomplish that work, which is maybe something from a human perspective you would wish to avoid, but from an economic perspective could be beneficial.
How could climate change affect the state's ability to pay its bills?
And if there was going to be something that destroyed the Trans-Alaska pipeline, that's obviously the state's biggest exposure from a monetary perspective at this point.
That doesn't mean that the state isn't concerned about the economic impacts of climate change. The fishing industry is the first thing that Mitchell brings up as a potentially huge problem for Alaska. The state has the most productive fishing industry in the country. It generates nearly $6 billion in economic activity in the state each year. And that's just commercial fishing. That doesn't factor in guides and sport fishermen and charters. For Alaskans living in Kodiak, Unalaska, or Sitka, or King Cove, warming and ocean acidification could drastically alter their traditional fisheries.
As the ocean changes, what are those impacts going to be? And the difficulty is that nobody knows right now. But being aware of it and being aware of how fisheries might evolve is obviously going to be pretty important.
Mitchell says there are some big unknowns when it comes to the changing climate, and the state could take a hit financially. But for now, its credit rating is looking pretty safe. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
In some places in Alaska, Christmas extends past December. Part of that is Russian Christmas, which comes almost 2 weeks later. But as Sitka becomes more diverse, so are its holiday traditions. KCAW's Catherine Rose spends some time with Nina Vizcarrondo as she cooks a traditional Puerto Rican dish for Three Kings Day.
Hey, If it's the Christmas season, you'll likely find Nina Viscarondo cooking something special. But getting the exact recipe, that might be a bit harder.
And that's another thing with me. It's like, I don't really measure. It's so bad. I just go with the flow.
Living in Alaska can have its drawbacks. And for Nina specifically, access to certain foods is a big one. But she and others have found a workaround, like this sofrito. It's a key ingredient in many Puerto Rican dishes, but you can't get it in Sitka. So her mom mails it to her frozen.
So it's like a mix of regao. It's like kind of like our cilantro. It has onions, cilantro, peppers, and it's supposed to like give flavor to your food. Yeah, that will go into our beans, into our arroz con gandule.
And that's the dish Nina's making today. Arroz con gandule is a bright orange rice dish served throughout the holidays in Puerto Rico. The Christmas season lasts a little longer there. They celebrate through January 6th, or Three Kings Day, when this dish is traditionally served. She starts by sautéing some garlic, and then she throws an icy cube of sofrito in the pan, followed by some rice, pigeon peas, a little water, and lots of seasoning.
Yeah, Puerto Rican cuisine is not really spicy, but I like spicy, so I'll be adding a little bit of chili powder.
Then she adds a packet of sazon, an ingredient she also can't get in Sitka. It's what gives the dish its bright orange color, and you can see the change almost immediately.
The magic in the foils. See how it changed?
Like, as she's stirring, her spoon clanging loudly as it hits the sides of the aluminum pot, Nina's phone rings.
Sorry. Hello, mommy?
It's her mom, the person who makes it possible for Nina to cook with all of these ingredients.
She's one to call. Every time I'm making something, what did you make to eat today? Arroz con gandule. Did you put sazon and adobo on it? Oh, you didn't use Goya tomato sauce? I'm like, no, mom, I'm in Alaska, sorry. We don't have that here. Well, then that wasn't the dish. So quick to judge. But we gotta make with what we have here.
The rice has to cook for about 20 minutes, so Nina and I have some time to talk. She says globalization of food has its pros and cons.
This is a pro. Like, you can maintain your cultural identity no matter how isolated you are from the place of origin.
She's been thinking about her home country a lot this time of year.
In the holidays, I remember the Three Kings would be like with a mayor or something in a truck, like a pickup truck or something, and they'd be throwing gifts and candy around the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Those were good times, but with the situation the island is in, and I get so sad to think about how these kids might not be experiencing that this year.
After Hurricane Maria, Nina went back to Puerto Rico to deliver supplies and see her family. Her employer, Alan Marine, bought the ticket. After about 20 minutes, you can smell the seasoned rice from across the room. It's savory, flavorful, but not too spicy, and the tender pigeon peas offer a nice contrast to the fluffy, buttery rice.
It's needed because, for me, growing up, Christmas in Puerto Rico is like none other than other places I've lived at. Maybe I'm biased because I grew up there, but it's a big celebration for us, and food is how you remember things. It's like that nostalgia. Oh, I ate that and it smelled like this. So those memories come along with the smell and the taste.
Nina and her family will be celebrating Three Kings Day this January 6th and teaching her son about Puerto Rican traditions through one medium in particular.
How can I teach my son about my culture if not through food?
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.